Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and Ryan O'Halloran.
Welcome in, everyone. Fat Tony here with you, Ryan O'Halloran from the Times Union alongside. You know what Ryan does. He covers the Jacksonville Jaguars for the Times Union paper over there. Mike Dempsey on vacation all week long. He'll be back with us next Monday. But until then, you're stuck with me, Jacksonville, as we dive into Jaguars talk and NFL talk here for the next couple of hours. Let's start off by saying happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone out there. We hope that you're planning on celebrating, but celebrating safely. It is one of the amateur nights of the year. This and New Year's, the two big ones every single year.
I'm not wearing anything green.
Me either.
So I'm resting on my last name. That's enough. That's enough for today.
Do you go out and celebrate St. Patty's?
No, I never really have. My dad texted myself, my brother, and my sister this morning. So it's Happy St. Patty's Day. I was never into the green beer or anything like that, or cabbage or anything like that. So, but it's just, maybe I'd wear a green hat, but other than that, that's it.
Right. Not even going to tip back one or two Guinnesses.
No. I got a big day coming up, or big week coming up with a lot of basketball. So we're going to save up.
Right. So you're covering the tournament this week too, or?
Yeah, we have all hands on deck. We got Justin and Gene going to Dayton. And then, here across the street, myself, Hayes, Don Colwell, and Gary Smith. So, just about everybody will be pitching in. And I have the Baylor Georgia State game Thursday afternoon, which could be a little intriguing.
Sure.
So it'd be cool. I mean, it's the only time I cover college basketball, and it's just a blast.
Oh, it's a ball every year when we get to this time. I know for me, I talked about this a little bit last night, but if I combined all the college basketball games I've watched to this point this year and just the time that it takes,
one day,
I've probably watched three full games if you combine everything that I've seen this year, but this time of year, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, totally locked in once this tournament gets started. And it's a little bit weird this year that there's no Florida State, there's no Miami, there's no Florida. Mm-hmm. This is the weirdest of all. But UNF, of all the teams,
carrying
the one
flag.
Carrying the flag for the state of Florida. Good luck to them tomorrow night as they take on Robert Morris. We may catch up with Richard Miller tomorrow, talk a little bit about that, preview the game for you tomorrow. But right now, let's get into a little bit of Jaguars talk. The fan feedback spotlight question today, in honor of St. Patrick's Day. Irish folklore says that if you capture a leprechaun, that he has to grant you three wishes. So I said, okay, assuming you get three wishes and you're going to use one of those wishes for the benefit of the Jags, what would that wish be? If you want to get involved with that question today, you can at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Tyler Devitt, and also on our Facebook page, facebook.com/JaguarsToday. If you were to capture a leprechaun and make one wish for the Jaguars, what would that wish be? With that being said, we're a week into this thing now. The free agency officially opened up last Tuesday afternoon at 4 o'clock. They've brought in 7 new faces. I know we talked about a lot of these guys because we kind of had an idea of what was going to happen last Tuesday and Wednesday when we had you in last week. But you've had a week to digest what they've done in free agency to this point. What is your reaction to some of these guys that are coming in?
Well, you sort of pat yourself on the back in terms of you knew what they were going to address, and they sort of did. Mm-hmm. So, okay, we're not totally morons. You know,
right.
We knew they needed a right tackle, a tight end, a free safety. They've addressed some of those things, but we're talking off the air, once these guys arrive, then you start digging into them a little bit. Okay, what do these guys do well? What's their upside, et cetera? And just talking to Gus Bradley last week, and I said, you know, tell me something. Who are you excited about? And the name that popped up a couple of times was Devon House, which for the money he's paid, he shouldn't be below the radar. But because of the other names, he was. So,
sure.
Because this defense had 3 interceptions from corners last year. They got to have more this year. They got to have a pick six or two. you know, in when you create that pressure on a quarterback, can you have a corner who can capitalize? So that's the one name that kept popping up. And then the other one was Jeremy Parnell. Okay, can he bring stability to that right tackle spot? And you really look at this free agent class, you almost divide it into two categories. Julius Thomas is his own category. And because everybody thought they're going to get him, they did. Now you look at the other guys because they're more unknowns. And you start figuring out you know, how they can help this team. And, you know, they did get better as a team. I'm surprised more people haven't really acknowledged, at least nationally, what they did and just give an opinion on it. But maybe they'll get to that later. But I'm interested to see next week at the owners' meetings what some of the other coaches say about some of these guys.
Sure. I mean, there's nothing super sexy about what the Jaguars did. They go land the big fish in Julius Thomas, and everything else are the kind of moves that a team that is trying to catch up from a team-building perspective makes. And you would expect them to be making. I was thinking about, you know, going back and watching some of these guys, and Parnell and House specifically, mm-hmm. as guys that they're bringing in to be starters. That's your starting right tackle. That's a starting outside corner for this team. And just wanted to get an idea of what kind of player they were bringing in with these guys. You go back to Dave Caldwell and what he said last week, where they had the five targets in free agency. They hit on three of them. Randall Cobb and Devin McCourty go back to the teams that they had already been playing for. I got the sense, and we've been talking about it for a week now, but got the sense that the Jaguars probably had the best offer on the table for Devin McCourty, and he chose to go back to New England, which you can't blame him. I mean, New England's a place where he's won a lot of football games. He's young. You get the opportunity to play for $47 million. I mean, it's not that he's turning down that much money to go back and do that. So from a grading perspective for this team, I feel like there's a lot of questions as far as how these guys project, right? Parnell and House, they haven't done it at this level. Scuda is another guy that just, they haven't been starters in this league. Mm-hmm. So you're projecting a lot, but from the standpoint of the team, and like you said, the things that we were expecting them to address, if the plan really was, here are our five targets, and if it doesn't work out with McCourty, here are the three guys we want to go get instead. If that was the plan going into free agency, then they knocked their plan out of the park. The question is the plan the right one for this team going forward?
It's tough to argue that they filled the wrong holes because they went after a running back. And that's one thing about Parnell. When you watch him, the thing that sticks out is how good DeMarco Murray is.
He really is.
So, I mean, that would have been, we can get into that a little later. That would have been the home run for this team. But you're almost like you're doling out this these signing bonuses and base salaries, you know, for future performance, and you're not giving them any like presents for coming here. So, you know, Scoot is interesting. They said, okay, he's gonna be a first and second down guy. Okay, does that mean they're sticking with Puzzlizzi as a three down linebacker? How's that gonna work out?
Right.
And I think the real thing where you can project now is you can start really connecting the dots on the draft. Is they didn't sign a pass rusher. They didn't really pursue a Leo. Strong group in the draft. They probably feel they can get one at 3, 8, 10, 17. Also running back. That was a one-off on Murray. They didn't get him. They weren't going to go after anybody else. How early is good to go for a running back? I say second round, but that's the benefit now of adding these guys. If you can really start honing in on their draft needs.
Sure, and for a team that has had glaring needs going into the last couple of drafts, I think there is still probably a pretty big need at that pass rush spot. They got to figure out what they're going to do at the running back position. But the running back position gives you kind of flexibility even in the draft, where you can get a guy that can play the position. And you don't have to do it in the first round. You know, it's not that glaring a need. It's something you can wait and see if there are guys who even fall to you in the second round that you really like at other positions that you can say, all right, then we'll go get a running back in the third or fourth round. That's the way the league seems to be working right
now.
Yeah,
and this is where you want to be inside those walls across the hall is, do they, when they have their depth chart, do they have that number one running back spot just completely empty? Is
right.
that what they're going to be looking for? Okay, that means you got to look earlier. You know, do they feel like they can get a guy in the fourth round who can be a part of a group? Well, then you can wait a little longer. So, you know, we'll find out what their mindset is on probably night two of the draft.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another. And then the other thing is they weren't in the market for receivers except for Cobb. Brian Walters, he's going to make this team as a punt returner if he makes it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to get an inside guy. You know, is that a, you know, can a Philip Dorsett, who impressed the coaches at the Senior Bowl from Miami, can he play there? Kind of Tyler Lockett from K-State, can he play there and also return punts? So what they're looking for is an inside receiver, but also they're looking for guys now who can play more than one spot.
Sure, and we'll take a look at what the Jaguars' plan may be at running back and wide receiver here in just a moment. Hayes Carlion from the Times Union, your partner in crime over there, scheduled to join us here in about an hour to talk a little bit about the upcoming draft. As, look, free agency pretty much in the books for this team. There may be a couple more things may come down as far as guys getting 1 or 2 year deals, mm-hmm. kind of show me deals in the league, but they're pretty much done with their big ticket items in free agency. So we can turn our attention towards the draft in late April and what the Jags are going to do with that number 3 spot and beyond. Hayes Carlion from the Times Union scheduled to join us here in about an hour to talk about that. Again, the fan feedback spotlight question today. We are asking you, the fans, in honor of St. Patrick's Day, the Irish folklore says that if you capture a leprechaun, he has to grant you 3 wishes. Assuming you'd spend one of those wishes on your beloved Jaguars, what would that wish be? At 1010XL Fat Tony, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Tyler Devitt, and on our Jaguars Today Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. Let's talk about the running back.
Let's challenge people on that poll question. Let's think outside the box here.
Yeah, you don't have to just say championship.
How about this? How about a win in September?
It would be nice. Let's get off to a hotter start than they have in a while here in Jacksonville. All right, we'll get into the wide receiver and running back position. They obviously made a run at DeMarco Murray. What does that mean for this team's intent at that position? Perhaps through the rest of free agency, but definitely into the draft. We'll talk about that. I'm Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran alongside here on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.com. I got a feeling you're going to be hearing these kind of songs a lot on the station today. That's all right by me. I enjoy the Dropkick Murphys.
Makes you want to go
St.
drink in it.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. I know it. And maybe I will a little bit later on today. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. Fat Tony here with Ryan O'Halloran. Mike Dempsey out on vacation. You know, Lauren Brooks, who produced this show up until a couple of months ago, and she came out to the Super Bowl, hung out with Mike and I for a little bit. She's still one of the co-hosts of Helmets and Heels, which you can hear tonight from 7 to 9 right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. A special 2-hour edition. They'll be live over at Colhane's Irish Pub, and if you're looking for somewhere to hang out and party on St. Patrick's Day, an Irish Pub is a good place to start. One of the newest Jaguars, Dan Scuda, apparently supposed to be calling in on the show tonight as well. So, hi, Lauren. I know she told me during Super Bowl week that St. Patrick's Day is her favorite holiday of the year. Her favorite holiday.
I like Christmas.
Man, I love Christmas. And I love Thanksgiving. And I enjoy the 4th of July. I have some Irish roots, but I'm not necessarily Irish. So I don't know St. Patrick's Day, where it even falls on the spectrum, but I know for Lauren Brooks, it's her favorite holiday of the year. You can go hang out with her and the ladies of Helmets and Heels tonight from 7 to 9 at Colhane's Irish Pub. And again, it's an Irish pub. I was out there on Sunday. They're ready to roll for St. Patrick's Day. They are ready to rock and roll over there. So if you're looking for a place to go party tonight and enjoy the festivities, nowhere better than Colhane's Irish Pub. We were talking about the Jags made the run at DeMarco Murray, and it felt like a good faith effort. They made an honest effort to go get DeMarco Murray. They weren't going to go crazy on whatever their price point was for the player, but it felt like he was the only running back in this free agency class that they had any interest in bringing in.
Yeah, and you know, you lump that with receiver too. They, you know, they felt Cobb was a special player, so they went after him. You haven't seen them connected with any of these other receivers. Same thing with running back, because as usually is the case, as soon as Murray signed, the other dominoes fell extremely quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The one deal, C.J. Spiller, interesting decision to go to New Orleans. I thought if the Jaguars had changed course and been interested in a running back, he could have been an option.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they were going to give him the 4 years that New Orleans gave him. So, you know, they're going to wait. You know, by all accounts, it's a deep running back class. After the first couple guys, so I think You know, the reason you try and take advantage of the cap space by making a splurge like that, but also you know they had their breaking point, and I mean, maybe was it six per year, 6.5 per year? We don't know.
Right. I mean, we don't know what they were offering the guy, but they weren't willing to go north of whatever that offer was going to be. And it felt like, you know, as the story developed with DeMarco Murray, maybe his camp was trying to use Jacksonville and Oakland to hope that the price would start skyrocketing as those two teams with a lot of cap money to spend would go crazy for a guy like DeMarco Murray. And obviously the Jags weren't willing to do that kind of thing. They made their offer. Whatever it was wasn't good enough for DeMarco Murray, so they call the Eagles and say, hey, you know, let's dance here.
Yeah,
and it still wasn't enough to get the Dallas Cowboys to budge.
Yeah, and you look, as I read yesterday, that Dallas's top offer was like 5 to 5.5. Well, that means they had no intention of keeping them. I mean, they just, you know, you sort of make an offer for the sake of making an offer.
Sure.
Because if it was close, he would have been stupid to leave Dallas. Now he goes to division rival. I mean, fascinating subplots there.
No, there definitely is, and maybe it tells you about where the decision-making power is in Dallas right now. With all the talk last year going into the draft about how enamored Jerry Jones was with Johnny Manziel and the possibility of that, they don't do that last year.
Yeah, Jerry Jones was leading that talk.
Right. They go into free agency this year. They know they have these two premier targets in Dez Bryant and DeMarco Murray. They get Dez Bryant with the franchise tag, and they obviously decided we're not overspending to bring back DeMarco Murray. It tells you that, first of all, it feels like a team that Jerry Jones is not necessarily handling all the player decisions right now for. And it tells you that they figured out in the last couple of years exactly how to manage the cap, and they're not willing to blow it up even for a player as talented as DeMarco Murray.
Yeah, and Stephen Jones obviously has a big role in that. The next test for Dallas, and this impacts the Jags, is they're picking, well, probably picking 27, 28. Do they go running back? Does Jerry dip his toe in there and take Melvin Gordon if he's on the board?
They've been linked to him, yeah.
So, okay, not that the Jaguars were going to take Melvin Gordon, but does that start a little bit of a domino where maybe the Jags say, hey, if a couple running backs are already off the board, we got to take one now? Because you remember last year, they made that trade in the third round to get Brandon Linder because the guard crop was disappearing rapidly.
Sure.
So, you know, what those teams at the bottom of the first round do, they're a lot better than the Jaguars, but they may take a little bit more leap of faith on a developmental player that the Jaguars had their eyes on at 36.
No, sure, they could, and that's the way the draft works a lot of times is you wait, and then one team starts picking a position, and it's like, all right, here we go. You know, it's time to go get our guy at that position because we got to have that guy.
And a prime example is the Jaguars last year in the second round. They're sitting at 40 and never thought Marquise Lee would be there. They're ready to take Allen Robinson. So they take Marquise. Well, then they're like, you know, sort of biding their time. Allen Robinson's still available. Make the trade. Get up and get him. Right now they don't have that flexibility because they just have those 7 picks. But there's really no trade assets right now. You know, maybe Lewis on that day 3 of that draft. But so I think you're not going to see a ton of activity by the Jags if they stay put at 3.
No, probably not. Probably not at this point. But looking at the it sounds like running back is pretty much a done deal in free agency. They're not looking at any of those guys. And based on the conversation I had with Dave Caldwell, the pursuit of Randall Cobb was about trying to get a guy that can play the slot. And there's nobody better in the league right now at playing the slot than Randall Cobb. So that was their idea. They like Robinson and Lee on the outside. So if they're going to bring in a guy in free agency, you would think that that's where they're looking, is a guy that can play in that position. Some of the veteran names that are out there, again, the Jags haven't been linked to anybody at this point, but Michael Crabtree, Greg Jennings, Dwayne Bowe, Stevie Johnson, Denarius Moore, do any of those guys even fit the criteria of being a guy that can play in the slot?
I wouldn't think so, because you look at, Denarius Moore, total speed guy. Crabtree, they didn't have any interest in from the get-go. Jennings just hit the market. It's, I don't think they're inclined to add somebody like Jennings who's a veteran. Because even Cobb is only 24. So,
yeah.
This looks like right now they're going to bide their time. On defense, they may add a depth guy here and there as guys get cut. But, I would be surprised if they add one of those names you mentioned.
Is that a little bit of a surprise? I mean, going into free agency, I think a lot of people thought that they would pursue a veteran wide receiver just because of the comments that Dave Caldwell made after the season ended, saying that they felt like they did make a mistake not having more veterans in that offensive room, and the wide receiver group is the youngest group on the team. Is it a bit of a surprise if they come out of free agency with no veteran added?
A couple weeks ago I would have said, okay, if they're not going to get Cobb, are they going to make a run at Torrey Smith? But they obviously weren't going to be – they didn't want to pay that money. I don't really blame them on that. The one thing I did carry that offseason was that comment by Dave saying, you know, the team was too young. Well, you follow up at the combine talking to Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell, and they felt – they sort of got away from that a little bit, saying they hoped that their guys in-house would develop into leaders this year, mm-hmm. in their second year, in their third year. So, you know, they're running out of spots where they can add a veteran. So it's almost like, you know, they don't want to get a ton younger, but they're going to, because the next thing's up is the draft. So I think they feel like they have the, you know, with Blake, they have a guy who can lead anybody, and it's a good place to start.
Yeah, and was that the conversation up there at the combine maybe pointing to the fact that, yeah, they were really going to be in on Julius Thomas, and they kind of had the sense at that point that Randall Cobb's probably going back, but maybe that was the only guy they were interested in bringing in as a wide receiver?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, they weren't. I mean, I was throwing names at the board, and a couple of them, they would say no, no, no. Well, maybe, maybe. But even they, even in-house, there were like a Torrey Smith. They thought he was pretty inconsistent, mm-hmm. And sort of a one-trick pony. They wanted more of a versatile guy. You know, Crabtree's injury history, as we all know by now, that doesn't really get you an interview in this building if you have a injury problem. So,
sure.
You know, each of these guys, it was almost like after Cobb, there was a significant drop in this receiver class.
No, there was. I think that everybody kind of felt that way. And when Cobb went back to Green Bay, it became this frenzy. I mean, Torrey Smith got overpaid. Probably, but that's what you do in free agency. And by the way, the Jags probably did their fair share of that too. Now, they overpaid for guys that they believe in and project to be pretty good players in this league, but you're still, if you look at what they're paying compared to some of the other contracts for players at that position around the league, they might have overpaid for some of these guys a little bit.
Yeah. You know, when people put together that overpaid list, they're almost exclusively looking back. You know, and the Parnell thing is they probably did, but also somebody was gonna. We don't know that with House and Scuda. You know, and Julius Thomas, I don't care, because somebody was gonna make him the highest paid tight end in football or close to it, and the Jags won that, so they should feel good about that.
Yeah, and I'm kind of in the same boat. I look at the contracts they gave these players. If you believe in the player, you got the money to spend. If you project him to be a pretty good player in this league, then you spend what you have to go get him. And I don't feel like any of these contracts are something that they are going to be weighed down by, mm-hmm. you know,
most
three, four...
2 year deals.
Right, 3-4 years down the road. They did it the right way, and that's why they brought in a guy like John Idzik. It's to make sure if they're going to spend like crazy in these next couple of off seasons, which it felt like they could. I mean, they still have $42 million in cap space. Last I saw this year, I'm not sure how much of that's going to roll over to next year, depending on what they use from here on out. But they're going to be a team that's in really good shape again going into free agency next off season.
Yeah, and you probably earmark around 10 for the draft,
mm-hmm.
so that that leaves you with 32. So, and let's say they do make a deal for, to get Lewis off the books. Well, that, I think with the dead cap and the savings, I think it adds about 5.5 to 6. Well, now you're already in business for the next offseason. But you got to win some games this year first.
Sure. How do you feel about Mercedes Lewis? They bring in Julius Thomas, who is more of a receiving tight end, as is well documented. I'm not sure what kind of blocker he is. Mercedes Lewis has made his bones in the last couple of years being more of everyone talks about him as a blocker, more so than a receiver. I think that you're paying way too much for a guy that's going to be a blocking tight end in Mercedes Lewis. But you're also giving yourself some flexibility with two tight end sets for a guy that may not be as effective as Julius Thomas as a receiver, but is still an effective receiving tight end in Mercedes Lewis.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that has to weigh the Jaguars here is he didn't have a great blocking year. I mean, to me, the tight end's there to catch the football. If you want to block, put in an extra tackle. And Gus made a good point to me last week, and he brought it up, said, hey, is Julius Thomas the best blocking tight end? No, but, you know, they feel like they're going to be able to, you know, devise ways to, you know, put him out in the formation that takes a linebacker out of the box, that takes a safety out of the box, and that should help their run game. So you have that ripple effect. I thought that was a good point on his part. As for Lewis, I said this with TV the other night with Brent Martineau. I would be surprised if he's on the opening 53. Because what does, you know, what's the chemistry there? And also, how do you find ways to make him productive as well?
Sure. And I know the thought came out last week that he could be on the trade block. Teams were supposedly maybe interested in trading for Mercedes Lewis. What do you think they would get? Fifth, sixth?
Something like that. I mean, what it's going to take is, a team that has multiple day three picks because they have compensatories, which they can't trade, but they can trade their own, and say, and approach the Jaguars and say, we'll give you a sixth round pick contingent that he reworks his deal before the trade happens. If you're Mercedes, you say, hey, can I get a year added at a reasonable cost, you know, and maybe go to a more ready to win team like Baltimore or somewhere else. So, you know, if I'm Mercedes, you sort of take the pay cut, add a year to your deal, but also you got a chance to play in the playoffs. I think it's a win-win.
Sure. And look, we're getting way ahead of ourselves as far as trying to figure out what it's going to look like on the field for this team, because we still have the draft and, you know, five more weeks of free agency or whatever to get through before we even get to that point. But when you look at the possibilities for what this team can do, bringing in Julius Thomas, I don't know if Mercedes Lewis is going to be a part of the team's 53-man roster or not. I like the idea of Mercedes Lewis and Julius Thomas in two tight end sets. I like that. I like the idea of being able to keep Mercedes Lewis on the end of the line of scrimmage as your inline tight end and having Julius Thomas in the slot if you feel like he may be your best option out in that kind of space at times this year. But you can do that with Julius Thomas whether or not Mercedes is here. But I like the threat that Mercedes gives you as a receiver and a blocker more so than Julius Thomas. I think you're way overpaying that guy at the contract he's at for what he's going to bring you, but it doesn't hurt this team to pay him.
Yeah, and it's a contract you inherited. And one thing they don't want to start until they absolutely have to is they don't want to start a precedent of extending guys just to bring their number down, because A, they don't have to do it, and B, you know, you don't want everybody knocking on your door,
sure,
saying, hey, I want another year, I'll lower my number. You sort of remove that headache by not doing that.
Yeah, and we just got a tweet with a name that I hadn't mentioned to you at wide receiver, Lance Moore. That's an older guy, but he is a slot guy. I mean, that is what he does. Do you think there would be any interest from the team on that type of player?
I'm sure they, you know, maybe kicked the tires on that, you know, and I'm sure Lance Moore is looking at teams that made the playoffs last year to say, I want to go there first.
Yeah.
So, and that's where the Jags, like, you're not going to overpay for a guy like that. But I think some point, you know, what I wouldn't be surprised they do here in the next month or so is add a receiver who is a little bit of a veteran, but, you know, a lot of people may not have heard of, just to add some depth there.
Okay. That would make some sense. I know I liked Harry Douglas when he got released by Atlanta, but he's now with Tennessee. I kind of like the idea of Nate Washington, because that's a guy who's he's been productive his entire career wherever he's been and remained so even last year.
That would be, I mean, to me, that's a guy that I'm surprised he's still out there, because you look at his numbers, it's 50, 50, 50, 45, 60.
Yeah.
And I think that would be somebody that I would at least visit with.
Sure. And if the idea is to bring a veteran into the room, I think you could do a lot worse than a guy like Nate Washington. And you're not expecting to rely on that guy. That he doesn't get in the way of your development of anybody else on the roster. He may actually help it with what he knows as a veteran, bringing that presence into the room. I think that's what you're looking for if you're Jacksonville, adding a veteran wide receiver. All right. We got a lot more to get into. Chris Borland, just 24 years old, he's decided to step away from the game of football. We'll get into some of the repercussions of that and his reasoning. 24 years old, played 1 year in the National Football League. He's decided he's had enough of the NFL. We'll talk about that as we continue here on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today. I'm Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran alongside here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Oh, yes, the celebration continues. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. Be safe out there. I know everyone's already trying to lock in their plans for this afternoon and into the evening. I don't know how I feel about St. Patrick's Day on a Tuesday. I know it's always on the 17th of March, so it's in the middle of the week as often as it's not, but I don't know how I like St. Patty's on a Tuesday with all you yahoos out on the roads tonight. It's harder to get that Wednesday off. One of those deals. I'm Fat Tony. Mike Dempsey on vacation this week. If you want to get involved in our fan feedback spotlight question today, our question of the day, we always ask Jaguars fans, what drives you today in honor of St. Patrick's Day? According to Irish folklore, if you capture a leprechaun, he not only can lead you to his gold, but he has to grant you three wishes. So assuming that all you kind-hearted people out there would use one of those wishes instead of on yourself for the Jaguars, what would that wish be? We are simply asking, what would you wish for the Jaguars if you were able to catch yourself a leprechaun today? So you can get involved with that at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Ryan O'Halloran, at Tyler Devitt, 1010XL Tyler Devitt, and on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars today. We just want to know what you would wish for this Jacksonville Jaguars team. We've got some good stuff in there on that already. I know the Boston's Sports Bar and Restaurant text line, we just got a text in. It's 641-1010. If you want to get involved with the show that way, you can, asking about what's the deal with Clay Harbor, because he's not a name we mention every time we talk about the tight end position. But that is a guy that's still under contract for one more year with the Jags, and I would expect to be here this coming season. I'm not sure where he stands, though, right now. Ryan, what have you heard?
Which guy?
Clay Harbor.
Yeah. I mean, he got demoted last year.
He did.
If Lewis is here, I'd be surprised if he makes the roster.
But yeah. You don't think Lewis is going to be here?
Yeah, so that creates a chance for Clay. What helps Mercedes is that this is just a completely woeful tight end draft. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. So, maybe that's – I think that also has to play in their thinking. You can't cut a guy when you don't have a replacement in mind.
Yeah, I was curious. Mike and I were keeping our eyes on a couple of guys here in free agency. Anthony Fasano, not a guy to come in and be a receiver, but that's another way. He's a guy that in the league every year – it's 25 or 30 catches for Fasano, and he's a really effective blocker. Now, he winds up signing with the Tennessee Titans, so that option is off the table.
I thought they would have been in on him a little more.
Right.
Maybe they were behind the scenes.
Yeah, because you would think if you're going to bring in a guy like Julius Thomas, if you can bring in a guy like Fasano as your second tight end, you're getting the same kind of production that you do out of Mercedes Lewis as a receiver, and he's probably a better blocker at this point in his career, and it would allow you to get out from under that contract of Mercedes right now comfortably.
Yeah, I'm going to look quick. I don't think there's a ton of tight end help still out there.
I doubt there is.
But, so.
Especially for what the Jaguars would be looking for, which is more the blocking type. Mm-hmm. That's what they would be looking for if they're going to go get something else at the tight end position at this point in free agency, you would think.
Yeah, James Casey's still out there. Whatever happened to him? He visited like 14 different teams, but
yeah.
He's not a block. He's more of an H-back. But, you look at some of these other bargains, they're mostly just defensive guys. So, they're probably just going to, maybe there's going to be some guys cut who are post-June 1 designations by teams.
Sure.
And then there's another wave. There's going to be another wave of cuts after the draft when teams make room for 8 draft picks and 15 free agents. So, I think they're just sort of maybe they're sitting back on that one.
No, could be. And again, with what they're looking for, something may become available to them that isn't available right now. So it makes some sense if they want to wait on that particular position. Did just see on Twitter as well, Stevie Johnson, the wide receiver who we've mentioned a couple times today already as a free agent, expected to sign with the San Diego Chargers as of today. The Chargers have been in on every receiver.
Yeah, so he would probably take Eddie Royal's spot,
yeah,
who went to Chicago.
Oh, Royal would have been a nice fit for just the slot guy. But, again, we keep talking about all these guys who would have fit maybe potentially as a slot guy. I feel like they did pretty darn well.
Let's think outside the box on this tight end thing.
Toby Gerhart. That's way outside the
that's,
box.
That's like that's in another circle. How about taking a ride at Charles Clay?
Yeah, but I get it from that's another guy who could be a good receiver for you. But
I feel like you need as many pass catchers as possible. I mean, to me, the blocking part is overrated a little bit. But I mean, you're looking at. I mean, they don't have their new teams here, but 4, 5, 6, 7 guys have signed other places. So, yeah. Maybe they can bring back Fendi Anabon.
Maybe they could. Look, I think Charles Clay is expected to get an offer any day now from the Buffalo Bills after the Miami.
Like, what's taking so long?
Right, after Miami signed Jordan Cameron down there 2 years, $15 million, which was the exact offer that he had reportedly agreed to with the Cleveland Browns. So Cleveland can't keep anybody at this point in time. It is a disaster up there in Cleveland.
Good day for them yesterday, I thought, with Tremont Williams,
sure,
the Green Bay corner. But you're just looking like how are they going to score any points
up
there? So.
It's one of these things where in Jacksonville you can kind of see the identity they're trying to get. They're trying to get fast on defense. They're trying to find ways to get more physical in that secondary and on that defensive line. They're surrounding a young quarterback with some options, bringing in Julius Thomas and trying to bring in that kind of more violent presence at right tackle and Jeremy Parnell. You can see the idea of what they're doing. And then you look around the league at some of these other teams, including in the division. In Tennessee, I don't get it. Like, I don't get the direction that they're going. Mm-hmm. And Cleveland's another one of those teams where you watch the things they do, and it's like, all right, where is this? What's the end game here for you guys? Or are you just picking pieces because that's the prettiest one on the shelf? I don't understand where it's going.
Well, I think that's you look at Tennessee, I'm trying to find their list here. It looks like they're just collecting pieces. I don't think the Arakpo signing was going to work out because he just has missed so much time with injuries. And, you know, he'll have one game with 4 or 5 sacks. And then after that, he'll, you know, go 3 games without one. So, but, you know, look at Tennessee Arakpo. You know, they signed Norris Searcy. He's okay. Parrish Cox, a decent player.
Yeah.
Mary Douglas. So, Fasano. So you're sort of like, okay, are you trying to square peg and round holes here? Arakpo never worked out as a 3-4 guy in Washington. So Tennessee plays. So,
right. But which was re-signing Derek Morgan made a lot of sense to me because he finally looked comfortable last year when they did switch him to that outside linebacker position, had the best year of his career. I think it makes sense to bring that guy back if you're Tennessee. Mm-hmm. The Arakpo signing, like you said, is a guy that just didn't look comfortable playing that kind of position in Washington. So what is the plan? And you got the number 2 overall pick, but there's no buzz out there about them even potentially picking Marcus Mariota, which whether you were going to pick the guy or not, the buzz should be out there. Mm-hmm. Because even if you're not going to pick him, you want other teams who want that guy to think that you might. And the fact that there's nothing out there on that right now is a little bit surprising.
Yeah, and Tennessee's probably their best offseason move was probably bringing in Dick LeBeau. Because I think he's going to bring a lot of new ideas to that defense. Just because, you know, Pittsburgh, no team blitzed Blake Bortles more last year than Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And it resulted and a tight win because their offense wasn't doing anything that day.
Sure. It resulted in a tight win and a pick six that wound up being the difference in the game for the Pittsburgh Steelers as well. We all remember that run.
I mean, now it rings because Blake's saying after the game, the disguise got him.
Yeah.
He thought that there was going to be a blitz from that side, so he's going to throw it out there. The guy stayed home, picked it off, touchdown.
Yep. Yes, he did. 17-9, I believe, the final that day against the Pittsburgh Steelers. But we got this date in football history, and it's an exciting one, as well as the Honda Drive around the NFL. A lot of news going on around the league, including the signing of Stevie Johnson, but Chris Borland retiring, among other things. We'll get to all of that as we hit the Honda Drive around the NFL as we continue here on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, time for this date in football history presented by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. A couple notable birthdays on this day, including Tommy Thigpen of the Barcelona Dragons. I'm just kidding. He was born today, but it's not notable, obviously. A former women's soccer player, I will mention her just because of her place in lore with U.S. women's soccer. Mia Hamm, it's her birthday today, born in 1972. But the most notable birthday today, Hall of Fame quarterback Slingin' Sammy Baugh was born on this date in 1914, passed away in December of 2008 at the ripe old age of 94 years old. That's a long, long life.
Sammy, who threw the ball without the laces.
He did. Inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1963. Sammy Baugh, born on this date in 1914, the Hall of Fame quarterback. He's the highlight of today's This Date in Football History, presented by Best Fence Company at Jacksonville. At Best Fence, the mission is to fabricate and install the highest quality product at a competitive price while providing unsurpassed customer service. Fencing is an investment in your home. Your family will feel protected. You'll breathe easier knowing Best Fence installed your new fence. Best Fence provides professional free estimates at your convenience. You can call them today at 904-268-1638. That's 268-1638. Or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is This Date in Football History.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
First off, 33-year-old Vince Wilfork was recently called by Bill Belichick as the best defensive lineman he's ever coached in his career. Wilfork isn't going to be a Patriot next season. He's headed to join Cecil Shorts in Houston and signs a two-year deal for $9 million, with $5 million of that guaranteed. Some familiarity for Wilfork with the coaching staff and a Patriots connection. The Texans have Bill O'Brien as the head coach, Romeo Crennel and Mike Vrabel all on the coaching staff in Houston. The Packers lost cornerback Devon House to the Jags and now have lost another one as Tremont Williams signs with the Cleveland Browns on a three-year deal. And a story you guys may or may not have heard yesterday, Tim Tebow back in the news as he worked out for the Philadelphia Eagles yesterday, and the team does not expect to sign the former Gator and the Jacksonville native, Tim Tebow.
Yeah, how could you miss that story? It would be impossible.
I wrote that story for the Times Union today on page two, but real quick on a couple of those things. Wilfork, I think that's a good addition for Houston to play that nose tackle. Lewis Nix, obviously Jacksonville native. He should benefit by learning from Vince. And then Tebow, if you're him, you take that as a positive that your phone rang, and sure, maybe this will spur another team to take a look at you. Found interesting that it was quarterback drills. He wasn't on that original list for the Veterans Combine coming up this Sunday. If he would get a chance to do that, he should jump at it. But let's see what happens from here.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know a lot of people out there have been giving the station a hard time over the past couple of years about the whole Tebow thing, and I think that Mike and I have made our position clear. We didn't think that the Jaguars should take a look at Tim Tebow. I still don't think that they should have taken a look at Tim Tebow. But that's not because I don't like Tim, and I don't want to see him be successful at what he does.
Look, people think it's so personal. It's not.
No, it's really not. Look, I think he fits what Philadelphia wants to do pretty well. And if the Eagles wanted to take a look at a guy like that, I don't blame him. It's the coverage of it that is ridiculous. As I said, how could you miss it when it happened, considering it was all over the place? I flipped on to NFL Total Access last night for about 10 minutes, and the entire 10 minutes I was watching, their Twitter question that night was Tebow yes or Tebow no. They went to a Tebow highlights package. They had a Tebow wired up package from a couple years ago when he was in Denver. I mean, it was the Tim Tebow show again for a night on the NFL Network. There is something to the phenomenon that is Tebow. Again, I don't wish him any ill. And if Philadelphia were to sign him, honestly, I think it's a good place for him to be because I think he fits what they want to do. He is a mobile quarterback. That offense is all about getting the ball out of your hands quick to guys that are out in space already. That fits what Tim could do, his skill set in the league. So good for him if the Eagles want to take a look at him. They obviously didn't sign him, but look, I got no ill will towards that guy. If he found a job in the league, I'd be thrilled for him. As far as what the Houston Texans did, and I wanted to talk about what the other teams in the AFC South have done. We talked a moment ago about Tennessee, and I'm trying to figure out what they're doing and what exactly their identity is going to be. And maybe it's as simple sometimes as, well, they don't have a quarterback, so what can your identity be? And that's something that the Jaguars have struggled with for a long time, too. But they feel like they may finally have that answer in Blake Bortles. We mentioned Houston, some of the moves that they made yesterday. Vince Wilfork and Cecil Shorts, we all are very familiar with what Cecil brings to a roster and to a team. It'll be interesting to see how he fits in on the other side of DeAndre Hopkins, whether or not they're still intent on getting a wide receiver somewhere in the first couple rounds, still trying to replace Andre Johnson for the first time in a long time there in Houston. Wilfork is an interesting one for me, given that I'm not sure how close the Texans are to being a legit contender for a championship right now, and that's a guy who's going to help you for a year or two and then be done. They're really good on that defensive line, obviously, already with J.J. Watt. I think it helps a guy like Lewis Nix, like he said. And really, I'm curious to see how much being on a defensive line with J.J. Watt helps Vince Wilfork when everything is said and done, because that's how good a player I think J.J. Watt is.
Yeah, and from Wilfork's standpoint, I thought he would have been a perfect fit for the Colts, and I thought he would be looking at a situation where a team is really close to the top. The Colts made the AFC title game and control this division, so you know, he probably feels like he has a lot of football left in him at 33, I think he is, and the familiarity with Romeo Crennel. So the landing spot makes sense from that perspective. I thought he might have maybe – I'd be interested to see if Green Bay looked at him, because, you know, Raji's a free agent. You know, did Indianapolis call him? So, but now the Jaguars will have to contend with him and Watt and Clowney, if Clowney comes back twice this year.
Clowney, man, it's so crazy going back to this point last year and how desperate everybody was for Clowney to be the number one overall pick, and look at the freak that he – and he was. In college, he was an absolute freak, stud, everything. He was all of that, and he was a guy that I would have been thrilled to see drafted by the Jacksonville Jaguars last year if somehow he could have fallen to number three. But you look at that rookie year with microfracture surgery on your knee, and then – he gets bitten by a teammate's dog during the offseason to the point that he has to be put in a hospital. It's one of those things where is he snake bit? Is that pick snake bit? For a guy as talented as Jadeveon Clowney is he ever going to be anything close to the player we thought he was going to be?
Yeah, I mean, the knee part, the microfractures, you know, that's a tough thing to come back from. And, you know, if they had to take some cartilage out, and you know, then you're getting on bone, and that always leads to a shorter career. But you know, the Texans, I thought, have had a decent offseason. I mean, they re-signed Kareem Jackson, their corner, which they needed to do. They re-signed Derek Newton, their right tackle, because they knew the right tackle market was not out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Brian Horry is your week one starting quarterback. You can debate whether how good that is.
Sure.
And then, you know, Raheem Morris, free safety, I thought maybe some of the Jags would have taken a look at down the line. So, I mean, they're sort of, you know, they're not doing anything overhaul, but they can't, you know, they have a lot of money in Watt. I mean, Andre Johnson freed up some money, but I think the Texans definitely go receiver early in this draft.
Sure.
Even with the addition of Cecil.
And by the way, free agency isn't where you overhaul. You overhaul things in the draft. If you're going to change the direction of where your team is going, free agency is what you should be using to supplement some things, which, look, the Jaguars have been so far behind the other rosters in the NFL that they've had to do it a little bit differently. And the moves they've made this offseason make it feel like, even Dave and Gus feel like, not only is it time for this team to start winning football games, but that they're close enough with the roster and the young players they have on this team that if they add some of these veterans in at key spots, they can become a team that is going to start winning games on Sunday.
And I can't take Houston seriously until they have some clarity at quarterback. They missed their chance last year in the second round by not taking one of these or trading up to get Teddy. You know, and now they're going to take Brett Hundley late
right
in the first round. So it's just like, you know, it seems like they're guessing right now until they feel like they have such a narrow scope on who they think a quarterback should be for them, is that they're just going to, it's going to, you know, stretch out for a couple years.
Sure. And look, Jacksonville, at least you're not in the position this year going into the draft, which is where Tennessee is, of, all right, is Marcus Mariota worth the number two or three pick in the draft? And if he's not, are we really going to draft Brett Hundley or Bryce Petty, or one of these guys to be the potential future of the quarterback position? You're not in that spot because you drafted Blake Bortles last year. We'll see if Blake works out, but you've at least prevented that conversation from having to be had in Jacksonville this offseason. Looking at the Colts and what they did, look, this is a team that was in the AFC Championship game last year. They brought in a lot of old veteran guys, but for a team that feels like it's as close as they were, Are they making the right kind of moves? Trent Cole is a guy that it feels like to me is starting to slide backwards in his career. I keep waiting on Frank Gore to do it, but he refuses to. He just keeps producing at the level he has since he got in the league, basically. And Andre Johnson, I always feel like veteran receivers like that, when they switch teams this late in their career, have one more really good season in them, and then they kind of fall off.
Trent Cole, 10th year. Frank Gore, 10th year. Todd Harriman's 10th year. Andre Johnson, 12th year. It's like the Colts' strategy is, they feel like, it feels like, is Andrew Luck 37 years old?
And right.
They're acting like this window's closing. Trent Cole, they need it, because here's the thing about the Colts. They have drafted, outside of Andrew Luck, which they fell into, they've drafted terribly. They had to sign Trent Cole because Bjorn Werner is a bust.
Mm-hmm. They drafted him to play a position that he doesn't play.
And he doesn't rush the passer.
Right.
So they sign Frank Gore because Trent Richardson obviously didn't work out. And you sign Andre Johnson because I think you just want a veteran to go with T.Y. Hilton, and he didn't, you know. So their cap books are going to look interesting moving forward because they have to have earmarked for the future minimum $25 million a year for Andrew Luck.
Sure.
On a cap hit. So, you know, and they have to, I assume a deal with him will be done before training camp starts, because they're obviously he's eligible for that. But, you know, it's a weird deal there in India. It's like they're going for it, even though their quarterback has a long way to go, age wise.
Yeah. And you're right. It's a weird situation because it feels like a team that if you're building it the right way, the way they did with Peyton Manning, who was kind of the same kind of talent coming into the league, that, you know, you draft Marvin Harrison, you draft Reggie Wayne, you draft Edgerrin James, you draft Tariq Glenn to play left tackle. You draft all these guys and you build your team that way, and you watch it, the stability of that franchise for that 10-year period. And now they get Andrew Luck. They just fall into having the opportunity to go get Andrew Luck after Peyton Manning leaves. And now it's like, well, we're so close. It's almost like the Peyton Manning thing spoiled him. To the point that it's like, well, if we just add a couple of these old pieces, we can get back to where we were with Peyton Manning, at least competing for a Super Bowl every year, instead of, you know, building a roster that can be competitive for 7 or 8. They're building a roster that they hope wins in one, which doesn't make a ton of sense to me when you're surrounding that around Andrew Luck.
It's almost like if you're Indy, you sign some guys who are 25, 26, and get them on the upswing when they're 27, 28, so when Tom Brady retires in 2 years or 3 years,
right,
you're ready to seize the AFC, because you figure Peyton, if this isn't his last year coming up, maybe one more after that, you know, Brady, he's going to play until they steal his cleats, because he freely admits he has nothing else to do. So
right.
It's, I think the AFC is an interesting conference because it's sort of like, opening up a little bit.
It is. Manning and Brady and Rivers and these guys. Ben Roethlisberger probably has one more good contract in him, but you're going to watch it turn over at some point here in the next 3 or 4 years, and who's going to be able to step into that void. Before we welcome in Hayes Carline on the other side here to talk a little bit about the Jags draft and talk free agency with him as well. Chris Borland, 24 years old, steps away from the league after 1 year. The linebacker for the San Francisco 49ers steps away after 1 year in the league, saying that he's worried about his long-term health, essentially, after he's done some research into concussions and the effects that they can have. I think a lot of people are taking this as a bad sign for football going forward. I don't know if I feel that way about it. I think you've seen a lot of young guys this offseason particularly step away from the game before they had to. Maybe guys are going to shorten careers for some of these guys, saying, look, I'm going to step away before I feel like I'm too broken down. But 24 is awfully young.
Yeah, a lot of self-righteous people came on Twitter last night. This is a game changer. It's not a game changer. The next guy is going to find somebody else to play linebacker in San Francisco. You know, Borland came in with bad shoulder issues in the draft, combined with the concussions. Maybe just, you know, I think this is just an outlier. I think Jason World is going to play football again. I think he was sort of in a mid-20s life crisis there,
really,
joining the Jehovah's Witness. I think he's going to come back in a year or two or 2 or 3 years. But, I mean, people are going to jump to these conclusions. What you might find is guys get to 28-29 and they probably filled out their second contract, and then they maybe decide that it's time. But I don't think you're going to see a trend of this happen after 1 year. And really, and this is probably an unpopular opinion, is if guys are just going to play a year, just don't play at all, because you're sort of putting the team that drafted you, you're hanging them out to dry a little bit, because GMs and coaches get fired for drafts. And, you know, if you're sinking resources into a guy who then retires after 1 year, you know, if I'm the owner, I'm going to say, okay, you guys got to start digging a little deeper here and draft a guy who
sure.
is not going to retire after 1 year.
Yeah, and that's one of the many fingers this story has, the way that it's been stretching out the branches of this story, is teams are going to have to really dig even more into the character and personality of the guys that they're bringing in, deciding to draft, because if I think it's more prevalent than it ever has been. That these guys are more aware of the potential long-term effects that playing this game can have on them than they ever have been. So there is the potential that if you bring in a guy, if he does suffer one head injury, if he does suffer one concussion, is this the type of guy that says, that's it? Yeah. You know, I'm not putting my future health at any further risk. And honestly, I get it from that perspective. These guys that if they are going to be that type of guy, maybe they shouldn't be involved in the league. I also get it from the perspective of Chris Borland, who looks at everything that's available to him, says, all right, I've made $3 million or whatever, and I'm content with that. You know, I don't need any more than that in my life, and I feel like my long-term health is more important than playing this game. I get that side of it, and honestly, I respect that side of it too. It's a weird balancing act that the NFL is trying to perform right now. They're saying the game is safer than it's ever been, but everyone's aware of how unsafe the game is.
It's a violent game. I mean, pro football players make a deal with the devil.
Absolutely.
And, like, Bobby Wagner from the Seahawks, I thought, last night on Twitter, says, hey, I love this game. I want to play it as long as I possibly can. And
absolutely.
I think a lot of players are like that. I mean, it is a brutal, brutal game, from which if you make it, you're well compensated. And you talk to all these guys 15, 20 years later, even if they need a new knee or a hip, was it worth it? Absolutely, it was worth it.
Yeah, and we had this conversation about Jason Witten. Like, the mentality of a lot of football players, Jason Witten had the spleen injury. And he goes and he's talking to a doctor before the season opener a couple years ago when they were going to play the Giants. And the doctor told him, look, if you go out there and play, if you get hit the wrong way, you might die. I'm not kidding with you. You might die before anybody can get you the right medical attention. And Witten said, what release do you need me to sign? I'm playing. And I think there are more guys like that in the National Football League than there are guys like Borland or any of these other guys that are retiring early that are stepping away from the game. I think that other mentality is still more prevalent. I think when you see guys as young as we're seeing, especially this offseason, step away from the game, maybe it's weeding out some of the guys who are more aware of those long-term consequences than other guys are.
Yeah, final thought on this. What would be the perception if a year from now Borland says, I'm ready to go?
I don't know. He's a talented enough player that somebody would be like, all right, let's...
Somebody would sign, public perception. I mean, what would it be? You know, why'd you take a year off? And so that's, I mean, from his perspective, it's almost like you better be done.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, you better be committed to the decision you're making. Yeah. There's no doubt. I can't imagine having that press conference. Or that year.
I was just kidding.
Right. That year in a locker room where even the other guys in the room are like, what's up, dude?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
How much can we rely on you going forward if he does decide? And speaking of controversy with guys coming into the building, Adam Schefter and others reporting now, defensive end Greg Hardy is expected to visit the Dallas Cowboys today. So Greg Hardy, that's the first official visit we've heard for him.
I mean, some team was going to be the first. And
yeah.
You know,
why not Dallas?
Why not Dallas?
Why not?
Now the interesting part now is how many teams had told their owners, hey, we want to bring him in, but the owner says, as long as you're not the first one.
Right. So. And now it's like, hey, come on in. Let's have a visit with Greg Hardy. All right, Hayes Carline on the other side of the Times Union. We'll talk a little NFL draft as we are about a month and a half away from the NFL draft getting underway. Hayes Carline coming up next here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, everybody. Happy St. Patrick's Day. I'm Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey on vacation, Ryan O'Halloran alongside. We're hoping to catch up with Hayes Carline from the Times Union, talk a little bit about the upcoming draft for the Jags here in just a couple of moments. Before we get to that, on the Boston Sports Bar and Restaurant text line at 641-1010, if you want to get involved with the show that way, we've had a couple of texts sent in today. Here we go. If you cut Mercedes Lewis, who becomes the veteran leader on offense? Need a classy vet like Greg Jennings to help the young guys. And I think there's something to some kind of veteran leadership on that offense. I think that the idea is for Blake Bortles to be your leader on the offensive side of the ball, right?
Yep. And, you know, an offensive lineman and, you know, something like that. But one real quick point. We were talking about cap space last hour. The NFLPA updated their numbers. Jaguars at $31.6 million in cap space. That includes their rollover. That's third most in the league behind the Jets and Cleveland, who both have over $40 million. So plenty of room to do things.
Sure.
But there's not a lot of guys out there worth doing them for.
No, not at this point. Again, Greg Hardy, last we heard just a few moments ago, he's going to be visiting with the Dallas Cowboys. Apparently negotiations between those two sides are pretty hot and heavy right now. There's nothing agreed to yet, but certainly discussions are serious between the Dallas Cowboys and Greg Hardy and his representation. It would be a little bit surprising, honestly, after every waiting on whatever's going to be the outcome of this Greg Hardy situation, for it to be that quick. Uh-huh. Like, when it starts for him, for it to be over that quick.
Yeah, and it would be telling. It would be also telling from the fact that his camp doesn't feel like there's going to be a lot of other suitors out there, so you're sort of, you have to take the first one that's on the table, because if there were other contract offers that have been made to him, we would probably know about them.
Sure. One other text there at 641-1010 on the Boston Sports Bar and Restaurant text line. What's the deal with Storm Johnson? We just drafted a running back last year. Let's move Gerhardt to fullback and develop Storm and Denard.
I almost think the ship has sailed on Storm. Some puns intended there. They gave him a shot. You know, it just didn't seem like he was responding to some of the coaching last year, and you know, spent a lot of the season inactive. He's going to get a shot as a kick returner, maybe, to make this team. But you know, if they draft a guy in the first three rounds, that's not good for Storm's future.
No, I mean, what do you feel about him as a player, though? Like, I look at what the Jaguars have available on this roster, and we've been talking about this. Is Toby Gerhardt to me feels like a third down back? Right, uh-huh. Denard Robinson honestly feels more like a third down or kind of a special package,
backup back,
right type back. I'm not sure that Storm Johnson isn't the one that they currently have that feels the most like that three down running back, or at least the first and second down back of the guys that they have right now on this team.
Yeah, and you know, pass protection's an issue with him, so they took him out of some of those situations. It just, I mean, they sort of gave him a shot as a starter a couple times in the middle of the season. You know, broke off one or two runs, but didn't really do much. So, from their perspective, did they see him not reading things correctly? Did they see him not getting maximum yards?
Sure.
So,
yeah, and all those concerns that we had about Storm Johnson when he came into the league, really, right? I mean, those were the things we talked about, that, and the ball security was a big issue for him. Coming in, because he was a bit of a fumbler during his time at Central Florida, but it was how quickly can he pick up NFL offense. And honestly, as a pass protector, he looked completely lost on the field. Like, he just didn't know what he was supposed to do. And I can remember at least two occasions just off the top of my head where he flat out whiffed on a guy that resulted in one of those 71 sacks.
I think that was a scheme issue, because I think it was against a defensive end.
It was.
And, that wasn't really great for him. But so, yeah, he's one of those guys that's going to get a shot in camp. And it's a big one, because seventh-round pick, they don't have a lot tied into him. You know, he's practice squad eligible because of the new rule that you're allowed one of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably haven't appeared in nine games. But, you see, running back and, you know, in the draft, receiver, you know, interior line depth, you know, what's Pastor, where does he fit in? Is he a backup tackle, you know, swing guy inside? So a lot of T's to cross and I's to dot here for this team before they even get to OTAs.
No, there certainly is, and we're still efforting getting Hayes. I think we
Hayes actually, is available.
Yeah. We've had a leprechaun running through the building, I think, kicking at our phone system here for the last couple hours. Are we good to go? Do we got Hayes now, Tyler? All right,
there
let's
we go.
Hayes Carline from the Times Union joining us here. Sorry about that, Hayes, for the delay, but thank you so much for joining us for a few minutes today.
Happy to do it, and not a problem at all.
Hey, well, let's start off before we your draft insider ran today on page 8. Let's get into free agency first. We did last hour. We saw Julius Thomas' own category. You sort of feel he's going to be productive. Out of the other five guys that signed last week, which one jumped out to you as, okay, this could be a guy who can really make a difference this year?
I really like Parnell. You know, I feel like that was a spot that they had to get solved. And, I like the fact that he's athletic. I like the edge that he brings, the toughness. And I like his attitude. So I think he's going to make a real difference for the offensive line.
Hayes Carline from the Times Union joining us here on Jaguars Today. And as we turn our attention a little bit towards the NFL draft, as we have a couple minutes here with you, Hayes, how happy are you that the first question I get to ask you doesn't have to be, is Marcus Mariota worth the number 3 pick in the draft?
Yeah, it is nice to go through a cycle and not have to worry about the local team taking a quarterback. So, yeah, I mean, to me, it's as locked in as it can be. If it's not a defensive lineman, I will be shocked.
Mm-hmm. Well, and where would they be looking in that direction? I know Leonard Williams is a name that we've heard a lot, maybe the best player in this draft. A lot of people are saying with what they did in free agency, they bring in Audric. That position feels really solid. Their left defensive end right now. Would they still consider Leonard Williams if he was available to him at 3, or would they go for more of a pure pass rusher?
I would take Leonard Williams because I think he's head and shoulders the best defensive player and probably the best overall player in the draft. It would make more sense to take the Leo, but I just don't know. To me, it's about hitting on the pick, and I'd rather take a guy that might not be a Leo but could be a dominant defensive lineman then wedge myself into taking a Leo because I feel like that's where my need is. So I think it's fairly deep there. I think they could, come back to it depending on what the board looks like. But I think and I don't know that Leonard Williams will be there, obviously, but that would be, I think, the ideal scenario if they can trade down would be that Leonard Williams doesn't go in the top 2.
Topic of your story today, you looked at receiver and running back, what the Jaguars may do after coming up empty on Cobb and Murray. Let's say at running back, Gurley and Gordon, in either order, are the top 2. From your research for the Jaguars sitting in the second round, who tops the second tier, guys?
I mean, to me, it would be a guy like Miami's Duke Johnson. I like the Boise State kid, Ajay. Tevin Coleman's interesting. And a kid that was really impressive in Mobile was David Johnson out of Northern Iowa. Mm-hmm. But it's deep. I mean, in my opinion, if Gurley and Gordon aren't there, then I would take the slot receiver in the second round because I like Devin Smith, Philip Dorsett, Aguilar out of USC. It'd be interesting if they took a USC receiver in consecutive second rounds. And I like your boy, Tyler Lockett out of K-State. So, I mean, I don't know that I would take him 36th overall, but to me, I would get the receiver and then come back in the third round and get the running back because I think there'll be some really good depth still on the board at running back at that spot.
Look, you mentioned those slot receivers. Another receiver you mentioned in today's story is very fascinating subplot for this draft is Dorian Green Beckham. Couldn't stay out of trouble in Missouri, transferred to Oklahoma, never played a game there. Yet Bob Stoops was getting on the stump for him. Where do you see Green Beckham going, and how unusual did you see as a coach, sort of going to bat for a guy who never played a game for him?
Yeah, that's what stood out to me. I mean, normally if coach talks about one of his athletes and praises him, and you don't really, think too much about it, it doesn't resonate because, that's what 99% of them do. But in Stoops' case, the fact that Green Beckham didn't help him win one game, he didn't score a touchdown for him, and he still really went to bat. And it wasn't just his football ability. It'd be one thing if he was like, yeah, he was dominant on the practice field. But Stoops made a point to talk about, how well he did in the classroom, that he was, everything they could have, hoped for. That really, you know, said something to me. So, you know, we'll see. I made a reference. We don't know what Stoops is telling people in private, but I think it would be far-fetched to believe that he's this openly publicly and this positive publicly about the player, you know, and for that not to be truly how he feels. So, as far as Green Beckham, I mean, I think he's a top 10 player in this draft. I mean, you just don't find athletes like this very often. And as far as where he goes, I don't know that he'll go in the top 10 because there is some really good depth at the top of that position. I really thought the Texans might go Brett Hundley at 16. I now don't think they'll do that. So I think that could be a spot. You know, does he go maybe in the 16th spot to Houston? I think that'd be a whoever takes him, I think it's a brilliant pick.
And the Jags, look, as you look at what they did in free agency, Hayes, and really to me, what they do is they put themselves in a position where they can be a lot more flexible with what they want to do, not only in the first round but throughout this draft. There's not a whole lot of positions where you look at this team and say, they got to have a guy at this position. I think they still need pass rush, but if nothing else, what they've done in free agency gives this team more flexibility than maybe they had 2 weeks ago to potentially move down out of that number three spot and feel better about the type of player that you're bringing in if you do trade down in some scenario to 10, 12, maybe even 20 with the Philadelphia Eagles.
I think if they trade down, they're huge winners. I mean, even if it would just be somewhat like the Sammy Watkins deal last year, where it's just moving down, you know, 4 to 5 slots, you know, but picking up something, you know, I think that would work out fantastic for them. But yeah, they're going to have great flexibility. I think it's going to be interesting in the 5th round, 6th round. Do you take a flyer on just a raw athlete with upside, a guy like Lyndon Trail, the outside linebacker? I think he's more of a defensive end.
Your boy.
My boy from Norfolk State. I also like this kid, the Georgia Tech receiver, Darren Waller. I mean, he's basically, you know, the athletic-wise, I mean, he's Megatron. I mean, the size, the speed, you know, I would take a shot at, you know, at him. He looked great in his last two games at Georgia Tech. Against some pretty good competition. And Nick Marshall's a guy later on that I think, you know, maybe you take a shot at. I mean, to me, that's where they've sort of gotten. The first, you know, 3 or 4 picks, those are going to be core guys, and, you know, they're still, you know, needing to fill some spots with some better players. But I do think when they get into round 5, they could really roll the dice, and I think it would be interesting to see.
You mentioned the trade down. I agree with you. Is if they can move down from 3 to 10 or 11, 13 and pick up a second rounder, that'd be a great move. But is there? It seems like it's tough to project somebody wanting to move up other than somebody who wants to take Mariota. Is there somebody out there would be willing to pay a big freight to get up and take a Leonard Williams?
You know, I think Leonard Williams would be a guy. The position that I think you could see it is, does somebody fall in love with Kevin White? You know, or even maybe Amari Cooper, and say, we know Oakland's going receiver at 4. I mean, that would be shocking if they don't. So if you've got a guy that you feel like is head and shoulders the best receiver in this class, then you're going to have to go to 3 to get him. And that's where I could see something happening, where maybe, you know, is it possibly like a St.
Minnesota.
Louis? Do they want to come up from 10 to get the receiver they want? You know, that would be sort of a scenario I could see where, you know, the Jaguars are able to move down knowing there's still going to be a lot of great value for them at pick 10. I mean, you're still talking about landing a guy like possibly Shane Ray, Bud Dupree. I mean, Vic Beasley may still be on the board at that point. So they could go to 10, and it would be, frankly, shocking if they still didn't have a very good Leo prospect, you know, staring them in the face.
Well, then in the second round, you could go slot and running back because you could probably have 2 second-round picks.
Correct. So now you've really helped Bortles out. You've gotten your pass rusher of the future, and, you know, now it's just get it rolling.
30 seconds here left with you, Hayes. Before we let you go, we've talked about pass rusher there in the first round. What do you think the chances are that this Jacksonville team may be looking to surprise somebody, not take somebody playing that defensive line position there at number 3?
I think it's real slim. I mean, I think you look at these guys, they've made the right moves in the first round. At that spot, you need to take a left tackle, a quarterback, or a defensive end. We know they've taken the left tackle and the quarterback, so it just makes sense. The way the game is played today, you're at number three. If you stay there, you're taking a pass rusher.
All right. That's Hayes Carline from the Times Union. Thank you so much for a few minutes of your time today, Hayes.
Sure thing, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Hayes. See ya.
All right. There goes Hayes talking a little Jaguars draft. And believe me, we got a lot to talk about here for the next month and a half when
see,
it comes to
that's
that.
That's the thing. Is I saw this yesterday. We're only 45 days away from the draft.
I know.
It's going to, like, you know, once we get through the NCAA tournament, it's going to be like 3 weeks away.
I know.
Because last year it felt interminable.
Yeah.
And it's only a week difference.
Yeah, it was a long time between free agency and the draft, although the Jags weren't quite as active in free agency last year as they have been this year. All right, the fan feedback spotlight question of the day. We're asking you, in honor of St. Patrick's Day, if you caught yourself a leprechaun and were granted those three wishes, what wish would you spend on your Jacksonville Jaguars? At 1010XL Fat Tony, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Tyler Devitt, and on Facebook, our Facebook page, Facebook.com/Jaguars Today. We'll get to some of your answers to that question coming up next as we continue to celebrate here on a Tuesday, March 17th. It's St. Patrick's Day, everybody. Hope you're having a good one. We'll wrap things up here in just a couple minutes on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, let's get to it. The fan feedback spotlight today, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Ask Jaguars fans every day what drives you. Today in the fan feedback spotlight, we asked, in honor of St. Patty's Day, exactly if you caught a leprechaun, and according to Irish folklore, I did not write this or invent this, but according to Irish folklore, if you capture a leprechaun, he grants you three wishes. So, assuming you would spend at least one of those wishes on your beloved Jacksonville Jaguars, what would that wish be? Some of the answers we got today from Dusty. Number one, he spent all three, but number one, Bortles to see in slow-mo Matrix style. Number two, make Tony Baselli 22 years old. And number three, field tickets for me for life. From Scott, I wish for the NFL pundits to admit they were wrong about the Jags. From at Irish Jaguar, he just said, oh Lord. Hashtag Jaguars today. One of our fans over there. From Paolo, just be above 500 this year, please. From Alvaro, win all home games and score more than 35 points in three games. From Christoph, a win at Wembley. Yeah, those fans over there across the pond are desperate to see that team win. From the Duke of Duval, stop giving me heartburn during the regular season. From Eric, for Blake Bortles to turn Tom Brady-like, then the other stuff like wins and championships would come along. From Brandon, to be adopted by either Shad or Gus. I'd prefer Shad. As nice as Gus is, I'll take the multi-billionaire. From Duval Doom, for the Jaguars to win one more Super Bowl, then the Steelers total as quickly as possible. And from Joey, I'd wish for progress from the second and third year guys. Most important thing from this team, we shall see. And on Facebook as well. One from Lewis, I would try and outsmart the little fella. I would ask to win the AFC South. That way I get three wishes in one. Beat out Indy, go to the playoffs, and get a home playoff game. So clever there. Thank you so much for your responses today, guys. As we walk out the door, Ryan, do you expect the Jags to do anything else in free agency over the course of the next couple of days?
Stretching out to maybe the later this week, do they sign another depth guy? I mean, I think what you're going to see is signings like Brian Walters, who have played in this league, that can have a niche position, like a punt return like he does. I think next week will be pretty dead because, you know, the Dave and Gus and Shad will be at the owners' meetings in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, they really dive into the draft stuff. So you might have a signing here or there, but a lot of their heavy lifting, I would say all of their heavy lifting is done.
Yeah, don't expect any more big moves. The latest, by the way, on Greg Hardy as he starts his NFL free agency journey, really today. The Dallas Cowboys are visiting with him today. It's been reported in a couple different places now that I've seen. He's expected to also visit with the Seattle Seahawks, and we'll see if he gets any other visits set up. Man, it's a scary proposition, the idea of that guy playing on the Seattle defensive line, even if it means missing five or six games.
Yeah, you know, he'll be, and they'll say, well, he'll be fresh for the stretch run.
Yep.
So, but it's we're talking off air, just like we're interested to see what DeMarco Murray got contract-wise. It's going to be interesting to see Greg Hardy's contract-wise, loopholes, outs, behavior clauses, et cetera.
Sure. And for a Seattle team that's already done the short-term deal with a couple of guys and Bennett, and they did one with Averill as well before they gave him the longer-term contract. So, look, they've done it that way before to try to go get that pass rush, and apparently there are guys around the league who want to go play in Seattle right now, believe it or not, to be a part of that defense and a team that is consistently finding itself making deep, deep runs into the playoffs. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Ryan, on St. Patrick's Day.
Goes quick.
That's right. Go celebrate your Irish heritage, my friend. Throw back a Guinness for all of them back home.
Turkey sandwich, maybe.
Whatever.
What a way to celebrate.
St. Patrick's Day. I know. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone out there. Mike Dempsey will be back with us next Monday afternoon for myself, for Tyler Devitt, for Ryan O'Halloran. Thanks again to Hayes Carline for joining us, talking a little bit of Jags draft a few moments ago. We'll welcome in the boys of XL Primetime next here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.